This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Tonight's the only night that they're together. You know, so the Celtics are not going to be on our air. The Celtics are going to be on WZLX, I assume.
That is correct, yeah.
The Bruins are on 98.5, the Sports Hub tonight. But then, pretty much starting Wednesday, it's every other day. Bruins, Celtics, Bruins, Celtics, Bruins, Celtics, Bruins, Celtics, just like you want it.
So get your sleep tomorrow. Because tomorrow's the only night there's no game.
Every night there's a game to watch. Every day, next day, there's a game to talk about. And we'll be here for every home Bruins or Celtics game, it feels like. So here we go. Again, Bruins tonight on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Celtics on WZLX. But starting Wednesday, every single one of those games will be here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. And we're talking about it all and the Patriots draft. We'll get right back to the phones here. Adam in New Hampshire wants to weigh in on Celtics Sixers. Go ahead, Adam.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Hey, quick, I think for the Celtics Sixers series, it's going to be interesting to see. I feel it. I think the Celtics are going to lose. But I'm more interested to see, if the Sixers beat us in, like, six or seven games, should the Sixers feel better or worse about it in the future when they face the Celtics with Hayward and Irving?
So here's what I think. I think all the pressure's on the Sixers. They have pretty much all the stakes are on their side.
Yeah, they have a fully healthy team for the most part.
And they've also been talking up, like, you know, Embiid and these guys or Simmons, you know, who they've been saying, we don't need any outside reinforcements. We don't need any free agents. This is the team. We're ready. The time is now. Like,
yeah, the time's come. The process is over.
Yeah, they're like, you know, they've laid it all out there. And if they lose to the Celtics, who have no Kyrie Irving, no Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown
is probably not going to play tonight.
Okay, so maybe.
I mean, the Vegas spread has changed within, like, the last hour for tonight's game.
Okay, so probably no Jaylen Brown early in the series. And if he is back, then if the Sixers are going to talk up that sort of game, I think they've won 20 of their last 21 games.
That's 20 correct. And 1 in their last 20.
So they've won 20 of their last 21 games. They're talking like they've arrived. And we don't need any free agents. And they lose to the Celtics without half their roster. Oh, do you look like a bunch of chumps. Right? So the Sixers cannot lose this. I think all the pressure's on the Sixers.
I agree. I mean, in a lot of ways, the Celtics might be playing with house money in this series.
I think they are. I think they are. And I think they have a real chance.
Would you feel the same way if they had a fully healthy Brown? That they're playing with house money?
I still think they would be rightful underdogs.
Okay, so yeah, I look at it, though, and say...
I
think that if they had a healthy Brown, I think they could beat Philly.
Oh, no, I do, too. I still think they can. Yeah. I'm just telling you how, you know, I think how it would be viewed by the NBA world. Before Brown was ruled out, the series odds, the Sixers are minus 370.
You're kidding. Before Brown was hurt?
This was early last night before Brown. Well, maybe that Brown. I'm not sure how that times out with the Brown news. But either way, minus 4-1?
Oh, that's a colossal overrate.
So that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, that's a colossal overrate.
Like, I'm still taking the Celtics. I think there's good value there in the Celtics on that. 4-1? I'll take a shot with home court advantage.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll take the Celtics at 4-1. I think the Sixers should be a moderate favorite, not a heavy favorite, a slight to moderate favorite. I mean, the Sixers are young. How many times have you got to tell you, kids don't win in the NBA at this
level? They're good, though. They are. They're good. And look, with a healthy Brown, I think the thing goes minimum 6 or 7. I mean, minimum 6. Okay? Like, I don't think this is going to be a wipeout like that Miami series was. So, and you know, Embiid and Simmons are the key guys, obviously. And I think the Celtics have the chance to be able to defend them a little bit both. Like, Baines can put a body on Embiid, and so that'll make life a little tougher down there.
How do they guard Simmons?
It's going to be Horford. Horford's mostly got him in all the games that they played against him this year.
Okay, but
so honestly, this is where I think the Brown injury hurts.
Simmons is like a point guard.
He is.
So Al's going to pick him up at midcourt?
No, see, I don't like that one. I also think...
There's no way.
No, and you can't... I don't think Smart's an option in this series either, really. I mean, maybe for small bursts here and there, but he's too big for Smart. He can pass right over him, which with Simmons is a big thing.
Do the Sixers play with a point guard next to Simmons?
No, he's the guy.
He's the point guard.
He's the guy.
He's technically the one.
Yes, he'll pass right over guys. I mean, there's like a, you know, There's like a Magic Johnson mismatch thing with him because Magic was 6'9". This guy's 6'10", I think.
Does Fultz play?
No, not really. Where they're going to have problems, and it ain't sexy, because, yeah, Simmons and Embiid are the stars, are guys like J.J. Redick.
Spot-up shooters.
Yeah, Ilyasova coming off the bench, Marco Bellinelli. And the numbers, if you look at Redick's numbers against them, even the regular season, he shot like 60% against them. Like, they're going to have issues in the perimeter.
See, I would put Smart on Redick. That's what I would do.
Okay, no, but, so who do you put on Simmons?
To me, it would have been Brown.
Okay,
Brown and Tatum are perfectly suited to me build-wise to do it. Like, because you need a 6'8", 6'9", guy who's got some athleticism that can guard him. That's how you're going to have to guard him. And I don't think they, you know, so now it'll be, you know, Tatum. It'll be Horford a little bit. It'll be Morris, in all probability, will get some time there. So they're going to move guys around on him. But to me, I'd go Tatum. That's what I would do. But I think if you do that, now you're risking foul trouble with one of your better scorers.
Dakota and Braintree with the Patriots stock. Give me a quick Celtics stock, though, first, Dakota. Who do you like?
On the Celtics, since you guys were talking about Simmons, the big mistake that Miami made in the series was they treated Russ Simmons like he can't shoot because he can't shoot, kind of like with Rondo, and they backed off him. And they allowed him to penetrate in a pass. The Celtics will need to pressure Simmons like he can shoot, and that will keep him from making easy passes and getting and causing problems. That's the thing, how you stop Simmons. Miami didn't even know how to guard him. They had nobody to guard him. They backed off him, and they allowed him to go wild. So the Celtics will have a game plan to stop Simmons.
Very good. What's your Patriots thought?
Okay. So, Michael, I'm watching you last night on your network talk about the Celtics and drafting Sony Michel in the first round and how you hate the pick, correct?
Hate it.
Okay.
Fireball offense.
Okay. So this is where I'm watching you say this and I go, wow. And I turn to my girlfriend and I say, is he such a big hypocrite? She's like, why? Well, you know why? This is the same guy that said, well, if the Patriots knew who Tom Brady was and what Tom Brady was going to be, they wouldn't have waited till pick 199 to get him. So couldn't it be that they look at Sony Michel as somebody that is, you know, transcendent, and they didn't want to take him in the second or third round, and they said, hey, we're going to take him here because this is what we believe. Thus, equating your theory that, well, if they knew who the player was.
What a leap that is. Become a hypocritical? One's a quarterback, one's a running back, which grow on trees.
Okay, so now you're trying to defend your point of hypocrisy. This has nothing to do with
I don't need to defend my point on anything. I'm right. The running back is superfluous.
No,
it's useless to draft him up there.
We're not talking about the running back. We're talking about your thought process saying if the Patriots got. You said the Patriots got lucky drafting Tom Brady, correct?
Dakota, hopefully you're wearing some sort of parachute for that leap you're taking right now because you're going to smush into the ground. You're trying to jump across the Grand Canyon.
Michael, there is no leap. You said that the Patriots got lucky drafting Tom Brady. If
of course they did.
If they knew Tom Brady was going to be, they would have drafted him earlier.
Okay? Of course.
So if they think Sony Michel is going to be, you know, Kamara, why try to wait until the second or third round to pick up that guy?
Well, no, he's not going to be there. You draft some other running back.
But if their running back that they're going to draft is not transcendary, like come on,
Dakota, what? I've had the same thing on running backs for a long time. I haven't changed my course on running backs at all. They are disposable razors. You find one, you lose one. You plug in one, you plug in another. You find them from wherever they're at, and you don't need to draft them in the first round. You're talking about franchise quarterbacks versus running backs. Would you stop with this? Find something else to carp about. You're barking up the wrong tree.
I still don't understand the whole point of that phone call.
Me neither.
Like, you don't get the idea that for the most part, the Patriots have won without significant running backs? Significant contribution from a running back?
Don't you understand that most teams win without significant contributions from running backs? It's not just a Patriots thing. It's like, and if they do get a significant contribution from a running back, they didn't have to pay through the nose for it. They just found the guy. They just got the guy. You don't need to devote big capital to it. I've been hypocritical about other things. That one is, I'm pretty rock solid on that.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blend force drum and run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Marcus Smart picked his pocket. Smart to the left, down low, it's Horford who lays it in. What a look by Marcus Smart after the original steal. Timeout Milwaukee.
Man, give that man some Cheetos and a sandwich. Marcus does it
Oh! Smart a lob for Horford, and he flushes it two-handed. 24 points for Al. That matches his series high. To the corner, Ogilvy for three. Count it! Morris for three. Makes the shot, and fouled on a play by Antetokounmpo.
Wow.
Tatum fakes the three, takes the three, makes the three. Finds Rozier alone, and he knocks down a very big three. Rozier fakes the three.
No way.
Now takes it, and he made it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a three for Terry Rozier. Horford, fall-away shot is good. That's the knockout punch we were waiting for.
Al has done it all tonight. You look at the numbers.
Al puts the safe side down as if to say, no problem, it's over, and he's right.
We thought we were a better team. Unfortunately, you know, we cannot move to the second round. It was a good series, but we thought we were the better team.
The best way to phrase it with Al is he provides stability for all of us. Whenever you've lost other guys to injury, when people aren't available, when things aren't going your way, he's likely been through it. He provides a very calming influence to the younger players. Like I've said this before, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of good leaders that are well into their NBA careers, but I don't know that there are better ones than Allen Baynes.
Hey, look back there at the Bucks game 7. You make quick thoughts on that Bucks series before we move on?
I mean, Milwaukee to me is completely sackless. Really, sackless. And the Greek Freak in that game completely vanished.
Well, he got in foul trouble, too.
But he also committed some stupid fouls.
How did he look? Did he look exhausted?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. He was invisible. He wasn't engaged in the game.
So he either gagged or was so nervous that he looked tight or got legitimately tired or something. But I'm stunned it took this long. Like, I don't think really you showed anything or accomplishments by beating the Bucks in 7 games and needing all your home games to do it.
It's a bad team with a terrible bench, and Game 7 proved that. That Jason Terry was even getting minutes was mind-blowing to me.
It's a loser team that wants to lose. It's just looking for an excuse to lose.
They still got to Game 7, and at least in that game, to me, I think it showed the difference between the coaching. That Joe Prunty was given minutes to, again, Jason Terry, the Thon Maker, who defensively was making a difference in this series. Mike, he played 7 minutes in the second half. That's inexcusable. You're waving the white flag.
All right.
So I gave a little credit to the coach. Yeah, shame on me. Now I'm a green turban.
Congratulations. Thank we got Brad to beat the Bucks. We're just waiting.
But otherwise, you were ready to roast him if they didn't.
I was too.
It was going to be a bad look if they couldn't get past him. There was a coaching difference in Game 7. That's fact. It was.
Then how come the coach didn't make any difference in Milwaukee?
Oh, look, the home court matters too. You know
no, it does? It felt like the only thing that mattered in that series. Where was Brad in Milwaukee? Did he take those games off? Like all of a sudden he's a genius in Boston?
I don't know. Maybe he couldn't get through to the likes of some of these guys that were taking too many shots in that game in Milwaukee. Like Rozier, who is inconsistent. That's on him.
Until I see otherwise, with all of your injuries, and only because of your injuries, those teams are equal. They just are. I'm sorry. If you can't win a game on the road, and it's just a home court series, then you're equal. If the Celtics have a fully loaded roster, it's not even close. If they have one of their, if Kyrie Irving's there, it's not even close. Right? You win in 4 or 5. But without all those injuries, as currently constituted, you're the Bucks. So unless you prove to me otherwise versus the Sixers. But for now, I'm sorry, your genius coach couldn't beat the Bucks in Milwaukee.
I mean, you know, we were talking about the RAS thing, like things you've never seen before. Milwaukee had 0 fast break points in this game. 0. Zip. How do you have 0 fast break points when you have Greek the Freak, you know, and I say Bledsoe, who's a bum, but nonetheless, like, some guys with some skill that want to run and are athletic.
I'm sure
how do you have 0?
I'm sure
zip!
Stevens made some nice adjustments, I'm sure.
Well, Ogilvy, for one, I think, is.
And Prunty sucks. I mean, he's an assistant coach. He's an interim coach. And the guy they took over from was a complete bozo in Jason Kidd with no program. So, okay, you won the coaching matchup. Great. You beat Prunty and Kidd's legacy. That is woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Oh, Brad. Brad Stevens. You beat something named Prunty, an interim coach, taking over from a complete bozo who had no program. Wow. And you still needed all your home games to do it. And you're talking about the coach? What is the matter with you people? Seriously, I'm so sick of arguing this. It's just so dumb. You know, do something.
So why do you keep bringing it up then?
Murray did.
Yeah, because I thought that he made a difference in Game 7.
I didn't bring it up, Jimmy. Sorry.
Tell you what, if I'm Al Horford, I play the lottery, do everything before about 7 o'clock tonight, because at that point, it turns into a pumpkin again, pal. You got Embiid on your plate at 7 o'clock tonight. One of the things that amazed me about the Milwaukee series is that Horford was able to post up Antetokounmpo. Like, I look at that and say, how does that work?
We're the Bucks. That's how it works.
How is it that the freak isn't taking the ball out of the air and shoving it down Horford's throat every time he puts it up in the air near the bucket? Embiid will not stand for that. Trust me.
Embiid has sucked against this team in the three games he's played in the regular season.
So it's the playoffs, Murray.
Look, I'm sorry.
And offensively, he did nothing in that first round against Miami. So we'll see.
Watch out for him.
Two of the biggest loser clubs in the playoff field the last couple of years are you, meaning me, the Bucks. I'm sorry. See what I did there? So I'm doing a talk show in Milwaukee. Is the Bucks and the Bullets. So congratulations. Those are your two big, you know, playoff wins, neither of which you were able to win on the road once. You needed all four home games to beat those two loser clubs. And your other playoff wins are against the Bulls only after Rajon Rondo got hurt, asterisk. And then what was it? I don't even remember what the other one was. You lost to the Hawks. You know, so it's like, I still haven't really seen the Stevens thing in the playoffs. I'm sorry, I haven't. I have not seen the Stevens thing in the playoffs. I've seen him get you there to the playoffs, and you have home games because of him. That I totally grant you. You have home games in these series because of Stevens means something to you in the regular season. I think the further you go in the NBA playoffs, the coaching becomes more and more meaningless. Meaningless. Completely meaningless. You want to talk about regular season getting you through 82? The coach probably matters. Early on, you're facing some bum club like the Bucks. Sure, fine. The farther you go, home court and the players. And I don't want to hear about the coaches. I mean, look, are they doing this down there with the guy in Philly? Because he's supposed to be some hot shot, too.
No, to me, this was more, ultimately, it was more about that numbnut, Prunty, that was there in Game 7 and how he was changing rotations like every 5 minutes. Jabari Parker getting like 17 minutes in the second half. And again, Thon Maker, who was defensively making a difference for this team, gets 7 minutes in the second half. It was inexcusable. He was an idiot. So there was a coaching difference.
Yes,
there.
He's an interim coach. He's probably not even an NBA coach, really. He's the 33rd guy, the 31st guy. Like, he's not even he's an interim coach.
He didn't lose the series for him. That team has no balls. They couldn't come into this building and keep their act together.
Rick and Merrimack, what do you got?
Hi, guys. Three quick points. One, Bruins own Tampa. I believe they're going to win in 4 out of 5. They've dominated all year. Tony had a great point. Tuca should have stayed focused when he lost his skate. And Mike, you had a great point on the goaltender not needing the detachable skates. Number two, Bruins have a hell of a tough series coming up. Win or lose, the bottom line is bodes well, really, for our team next year with Kyrie and Hayward coming back. And yes, players mean more than coaches. And finally, the thing that irritates me the most is the Patriots draft. God help me. I mean, grade D for defense. I can understand drafting Isaiah Wynn as a tackle/guard from Georgia. I can understand trading for that beast offensive lineman from San Francisco. But the rest of the rounds, we didn't draft defense. And no, we have no defensive lineman who is going to be considered like a main force on the line to rush the passer.
So, Rick, let me stop you there. And I hear you on that. I'm just going to... And I know this is kind of weaselly, but I think it's stupid for anyone to declare that someone can play or can't play at this stage. No one knows, not even the teams that drafted these guys. So in two years, I'm going to look back and see how many good defensive players went from 56 to one, whatever you said.
143.
There. 56 to 143. Were there players in there or were there not players in there? You can tell. In 2 years, 2-3 years, you'll go back and look. And not even that. I mean, you could say other guys in the second because the Patriots started at 43. They had 23, 31, and 43. So they had three picks in that range where they could have moved all around. We'll see if there were anyone in there who could play and if they whiffed on guys. And if they didn't, and if that range of the draft sucked, then there were no players there, then we'll look back in 2 or 3 years and say, they nailed it. They were right. I mean, I don't know how else to do it. Just to say that you have that need, I mean, I do agree with that thing of just because you have a player. Like, I have no problem with them not drafting a quarterback. if they didn't believe, and I thought they might. Like I said from the beginning, wouldn't it be just them? Wouldn't it be so them to not draft a quarterback after all of this? And they did it because they didn't like this class. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
And a lot of these guys slipped. I mean, Rudolph went in the third round. You know, LaLetta went fourth. The Western Kentucky kid that we talked about, White, he went in the fifth round, I think, to Dallas. You know, and they end up taking a kid out of LSU in the seventh, Tommy Hudson Jr.
It doesn't count. I'm not even going to discuss him. I will say this, Maz, though. They are going to have to pull the trigger eventually, right? Like, I'm sure they went into this year and said, we're going to look at these quarterbacks and, you know, we really should take one. We probably want to take one, but we're going to take a hard look. So they took a hard look and said, none of these guys are right. So now they have to go to next year, and are we going to do the same thing? You know, we're going to look at all these guys. We have all this capital now. We have a need. We're going to take a hard look at these guys. We're going to get somebody. And then you look at them and you go, well, this guy's too short. This guy can't move. This guy moves too much.
See, you're baiting me now.
This guy's dumb. And, you know, they're probably so exacting that they look at these guys and they go, well, none of these guys are any good either. And now, okay, so you punt it. And then, eventually you've got to take a chance on one of these guys. And that's sort of the worry, that if you set your bar too high, you're going to reach a point here where it's too late. And, like, eventually you're going to have to poop or get off the pot.
See, part of me wonders if Belichick in this draft looked at the quarterbacks and, you know, or maybe it was part of the deal with Kraft and said, I'm not taking one, Robert, just so you know. Garoppolo was the guy that I wanted. He's not here, so I'm not picking the next guy. You give that responsibility to Josh. Josh picks the next quarterback, and it's not going to happen this year because I'm not picking him.
All right, God help us all then.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
James and Worcester on the Sixers, though. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, you guys were just talking about who's going to be guarding Ben Simmons, and I thought Shemmy did a pretty good job on you know, the Greek Freak. What do you think about him on Ben Simmons this series?
I think that's a good matchup, except you want to give him 40 minutes?
Well, so he'll get some time on him, I bet. I mean, you know, it's never going to be one guy the whole game, right? You're going to see guys moving around, but it wouldn't surprise me if they have to play him. They're short. So, for sure, like, he'll be one of them. But, again, it's got to be someone who's got a little bit of size, which is why I don't know if Smart's a great fit. I just think there's too much of a size difference there. Simmons is 6'10". He's just going to pass right over him, and that's one of the, you know, ways he can get the ball easily to guys. To me, Smart's not a great matchup. Plus, they can use him in other areas, as Murray was saying earlier.
Paul in Bridgewater on the draft. Thanks for holding on. Paul, what do you got?
Thanks for taking my call. Two quick points on Jimmy Garoppolo. If I'm the owner of the San Francisco 49ers right now, I watched the first round of the draft. It was the deepest quarterback draft since Marino was drafted way back, I think, in 83. Four of the quarterbacks that went to top four, legitimate first-rounders. I just gave Jimmy Garoppolo, who Mel Kiper said he lost when the Patriots took him in the second round. He said no one had him on their board. He could have been a third, fourth, or fifth rounder. So I just gave this guy $150 million. I could have got a top four quarterback at a fifth of the price. So if I'm breaking pencils, I'm slamming doors if I'm the owner of the San Francisco 49ers.
Hold on, Maz. Second thought, quickly. Quickly, what's your second thought, Paul?
My second thought, I'm sorry. Jacoby Brissett. Now, Parcells and Weiss love this guy. So they could have kept him for two more years. So what did they do? They traded him for a bust, a number of wide receiver bust for no reason. And that's my second point. Why didn't they keep
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there. So he is celebrating the departure of Garoppolo, saying that San Francisco screwed it up, but is complaining about the trade of Brissett. Your thoughts?
Did he just ignore the games that Jimmy Garoppolo actually played in the NFL?
I suppose.
I mean, did he ignore the two games here and the five out in San Francisco?
Do you think San Francisco's kicking themselves right now over the Garoppolo trade?
No. So again, it's great to celebrate this draft as a deep quarterback draft. How do we know they all don't suck?
And in terms of even if they're good, when are they ready? Garoppolo came ready-made.
Oh, yeah. No. Garoppolo's ready to go. If you were to ask me if Garoppolo was in this draft class, where would he have gone?
One.
Thank you. He'd have gone one overall. Yes.
You just made Maz very happy.
No, I believe that.
Too happy.
And I'm so sick. Oh, it's true. It's the 83 quarterback class all over again. It's more than likely that it's going to be the 99 quarterback class all over again with Akili Smith and Tim Couch and Cade McNown and all these other bums that were in it.
I'm with Murray. I mean, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Baker Mayfield or would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo?
Garoppolo any day of the week.
So this is what, to me, if he was in this draft class, you'd take him number one.
But Darnold or Rosen, I don't know. Because those are more classic NFL-style quarterbacks.
Tell you this, to me, you get a track record with Garoppolo. How do you overlook that?
I mean, it's hard to. I think Garoppolo can play. So, caller, just to answer.
But I'm saying take your opinion on Garoppolo out.
Well, I'm just telling you, they're not kicking themselves in San Francisco. And the contract, don't pay attention to the contract. It's you know, it's really a two-year deal for a ton of money, fully guaranteed. But if Garoppolo goes the other way, it's really only a two- or three-year commitment. Is what they're talking about. So, you know, the contract's big, but it's not going to kill him if he can't play. It's not going to kill him. We have got Mike in Foxborough. Hi, Mike.
Mike, would you say that the Patriots offense was top three in 2017 and the defense was bottom three?
Yes. I think they were second in points. The defense ranked higher than that, but by the time we got to that Super Bowl, you allowed 41 points, so they weren't good. I'll put it to you like that.
Completely agree. So why would you focus on defense? You guys haven't talked about the four guys they lost who just happened to be like numbers 3, 4, 5, and 6 most important on the team. The Patriots had no choice but to address their offensive need, and they drafted exactly in order of priority. They got their tackle, they got the running back, and I couldn't disagree with you more about running back because Look at who's on the roster right now.
How is running back a priority? Why didn't you call me last Thursday and say they need a running back? How come I didn't hear from you then?
Because they couldn't get in.
Oh, stop it. You weren't calling. Come on. No one, Mike, no one called us.
Mike.
No one said a word. I didn't hear one word from one fan, one pundit, not even a media cartel member said, you know what, they could use a running back. No one. Because you know why? They don't.
They
don't
do
need one.
Because they have Burkhead, Gillislee, Jeremy Hill, who are all, they suck. And
hold on, you're missing one.
James White?
No, I'm getting to him. James White is good, but he's maxed out. So with the four guys that you lost, you've lost half the guys who played in every game. You've lost probably, you lost 50% of your running back production with Deion Lewis, not to mention that he runs back kickoffs. So if you lose 20 to 30% production on offense,
Mike.
You're playing wild card weekend.
Okay, babe, I got you. Running back was not a need. It was never a need. No one ever thought it was a need. No one thought it was a need. At any point, no one. No one I ever heard anywhere. Okay, so, but even if I grant you that it was a need, which it wasn't, but I'm just going to grant you this so I can now make the next point. If you needed a running back, you had to draft one in the first round. When you found Deion Lewis off the street and James White in the third round, and any other guy that's made a difference for you, just off the heap? So come on.
See, to me, this is where it gets stupid. This is where it gets stupid, and it, just because it's the Patriots, it's right. There's no way that taking that guy in the first round was the right move. There's just no way.
Well, what if it's as simple as they liked the player and other teams were interested?
Okay, but again,
so how's it not?
Because they had other needs, and they could have gotten another running back somewhere else.
Not as good as Sony Michel and how he's going to fit into this offense.
Maybe.
Okay, so I just don't.
Debatable.
I mean, so the caller says, well, that, you know, they lost all these guys who played on their offense. They lost Deion Lewis out of the backfield. That's it. Deion Lewis. They didn't lose the whole backfield. And as far as Jeremy Hill, Mike Gillislee, Burkhead, and James White, I'm good with that group.
Yep, me too.
Fine, good enough.
And there's also this great guy named Harold Fenefesi. No, I'm sorry, it's George Wonderbutt. I think he's on the practice squad in Jacksonville. The odds are just as good that George Fenefesi Wonderbutt is going to come in here from the Jacksonville practice squad and produce as this guy. It's just the nature of the position. And we've been over it a million times, and you can accept it or not.
You should see Wonderbutt's sister.
I can't help you.
Talk about a Wonderbutt.
Long commercial free segment is next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
And now the Bruins have it. Here's Pastrnak. Scampers up the right side. Krejci. Near point now. Rick Nash walks in, shoots. He scores! Absolutely. That puck cranked in. Top right wing circle. The referee behind the net made the call. The light never went on. Rick Nash with a snipe to the far corner. It's 3-1 Bruins.
Judd Sirok got it right. That was a snipe. And again, to me, that was an absolutely huge part of the game. That was the whole sequence that started with Pasternak's cross-check in the corner when Marchand scored. The goal got wiped off the board, so it's 2-1 instead of 3-1. And on top of it, Tampa goes onto the power play. They get good chances there. Rask makes some stops. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Marchand and Bergeron were on the ice for the whole 2 minutes. Right?
Yes, just about.
The whole penalty kill. The Bruins end up going the other way. Nash buries it. Now it's 3-1. You get your 2-goal lead right back. To me, that was the biggest part of the game.
I said before, and I know this is honkish, so I regret it almost as I say it. No one's going to record this, and if I'm wrong, it's not going to matter, because as long as you say something good about the teams, no one cares if you're wrong, Murray. It's only if you're negative about the teams. You see, people don't care if you're right or wrong. They just want you to support the team.
Yeah.
That's what you'll learn.
Echo chamber.
Right. Right. Yes.
Like if you pick Toronto in the first round, for example, Murray.
Yeah.
That would haunt you.
They're only rolling to tell you that you're wrong if you're against the team. If you're for the team, you can be as wrong as anyone, but doesn't matter. It just gets lost to the effluvium. So this will as well. But I'll say it again. If the Bruins got what they got in that game, they can win the Cup. They can. And what they got in that game was Tuukka Rask holding up for a period of time when the team was getting outplayed. And that was most of the first period, certainly the first 10 minutes. Secondary scoring from that Krejci line. And, it really could come from any line, but let's face it. Krejci and Nash with DeBrusk, that's got to be the line.
Sure.
And Nash's ceiling is still so high, Rick Nash's ceiling, is that if he gets going, like, he could be the best player on the ice at any given time. No one in those bottom two lines is going to be the best player on the ice. If Rick Nash decides to really screw it on, he can be the best player on the sheet still. So if they get goaltending like that and secondary scoring like that, they can win it all.
And the other thing, too, is Charlie McAvoy looking healthy.
So I mentioned that earlier, too, and I'll give it a little subcategory of McAvoy continuing to come along.
So that one started at the end of the Toronto series, right? You could see that a little bit, particularly later in the games as he got loose.
That fourth goal, that slap pass to Marchand?
Tremendous.
Oh, just.
I mean, they had some pretty goals in this game. They
what
really
a
did.
Goal.
I mean, even Nash's first goal. That was a great tip.
Tremendous.
Right? And Marchand, I don't want to say Marchand did the same thing because the puck was on the ice. But Nash picked it out of the air. The Bergeron goal, they had some nice goals in this game. They caught a couple of breaks, too. Like Bergeron's winning off a defenseman. So, it looked like an absolute snipe. It got deflected. But, they buried their chances. And Tampa's going to find a way to handle that line. If they can't handle that first line, they're in trouble.
Okay, a few of the Bruins' thoughts. We'll start with that. The first line, their production speaks for itself. And just the way they play, I mean, man, they are a pleasure to watch. It is really tremendous to watch them in the offensive zone. But as it was in the first round, as it will be going forward, the key to these series is going to be that line producing versus how the other team adjusts. Now, what Cooper did there in Tampa is that he put the point Palat and Johnson line on him as he did against New Jersey. Tampa, New Jersey, round one, they stuck Braden Point and Palat and Tyler Johnson on the Taylor Hall line, and they did a really good job. They shut him down. They shut down Taylor Hall and scored a bunch of points themselves, and the Lightning went on to win in five games, blew him out. So Cooper stuck that line on the Bergeron line, and they went a combined minus 12. Point was minus 5. And he matched up D as well. He matched up McDonough and Strawman. McDonough was minus 3.
Second game in a row, the Bruins have someone go minus 5 against them.
Okay, so if you're John Cooper, if you're the coach down there in Tampa, and you've got now Braden Point, a minus 5, and that line crushed, and the D pair, McDonough and Strawman, crushed in that first game, you switch it up? Or do you charge them just to be a little bit tougher? I don't know, it's a tough one. Tony Amonte said he would go strength on strength if he's the Lightning. He would put the Stamkos line up against the Bergeron line and go strength on strength. To me, I still see a guy like Kunitz on that roster and say, he's that veteran rat sort of savvy guy that knows how to get under your skin and knows how to give you a whack behind the play or, do something to throw you off. And much like Plekanec, who knows every trick in the book, I would not be surprised if at some point Cooper says, Kunitz, go out there and do something to these guys. just because I just think he's a natural for it. But as was the case in the first round and going forward, if you go forward, the key now is going to be what does Tampa do to match up against the Bergeron line? Let's see. What they did in game one did not work. Interestingly enough, the point Palat and Johnson line for Tampa had as many shots on net as the Bruins threesome did. They were even in shots on net. The Bruins threesome were accounted for three goals. They were on the sheet actually for all five goals. One member of that line got a point on all five goals, or five of the even strength goals. But they were even in shots, and their Corsi Maz was dead even, which tells you I just wrote this down because I hate Corsi. Another example why you should never ever pay attention to Corsi.
See, I'll tell you, if you go back to the first period of that game, the Tampa had some chances where they either fanned on opportunities or missed the net. Like, there were a couple of spots there. So, to me, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're looking for rust from Tampa in that layoff, in the first period, it wasn't all Tuca. Tampa contributed to that a little bit because they had some chances.
So, anyway, what's a huge advantage for the Bees is that they don't have to scramble to match a line. In other words, if Cooper puts Stamkos out against Bergeron, the Bruins are fine. They don't have to run from that line. Like, they're more than comfortable with Bergeron in that defensive posture. And the Bruins don't have to play that game because Bergeron can be in a defensive mode, they can be in an offensive mode, and they can cut both ways. So you really don't have to worry about it. Tampa sort of has to choose. Do we put a checking line out against him or an offensive line against him? The Bruins can do either with Bergeron, and that's really what I think makes him special. Back to Rask real quick. Do you notice, and they pointed out on the broadcast, the new pads?
Yes.
So I don't take this as a bad sign because I think goalies, and maybe particularly this one, are sort of mental cases, right? That's all in their own head. And so, whatever it is, Bull Durham, wear women's garters if that's what it takes. I don't care. You know, if the different pads gives you a different mindset, that gives you a different feeling when you wake up in the morning, superstition, whatever you want to call it, whatever it takes, bro, do whatever it takes. I love seeing the new pads. Like, when I saw that, I'm like, I actually felt good about that.
Well, look, he's trying to start over, right? That's what he's doing. He's hitting a reset button. So everyone that you talk to tells you that it's unusual for a goalie to change pads like that in the middle of a postseason, given what's involved in breaking in a new set of pads and everything else. But look, the way he was moving, he in the third period of that game, he made a pad save with his right leg and then got the rebound on it where I thought, man, he looked like a different guy than the guy who finished the Toronto series. Completely different.
From the jump.
I don't know if it was the pads or what, but if he thinks it's the pads, then wear him to bed as far as I'm concerned.
That's what Amonte said. Different guy. Night and day. Night and day. But I thought you saw 2 minutes in. That's that save on Stamkos. Goes post to post. Boom. Right there. Square to the puck. Like, immediately. You just saw it. Like, that different guy. So, again, whatever it takes, Tuca. I'm with Maz. Wear him to bed if that's what it takes. What else? Another equipment thing. I know you've been doing this. You read Ian Moran on the Boston Sports Journal.
Yes, I do.
Ian Moran, he's had a cup of coffee with the Bruins. He was a longtime NHL. He was a defenseman, right? I think he was.
I think he went to BC, right?
Whatever. I'm not even sure. But so they have an ex-NHLer, Ian Moran, who, again, came through the Bruins, I think, for a little bit. Doing these things on Boston Sports Journal, just his observations, and they're excellent, really. They're good. He's a little homerific. I think he's, clearly favoring the Bruins, but that's okay. He still has insights that I find fascinating. Like, here's one. He says, Stamkos is in his own kitchen. He's one of the most talented guys in the league, and on Saturday, he was fooling around with his tape. When I saw Stamkos using black tape, I thought he broke his stick and was using someone else's. When I saw him have black tape for a second shift, it was obvious that he's banging his own pots and pans. Huge minus for Tampa.
I read that, yeah.
So maybe Stamkos is feeling it too, and so he thinks going to black like
hide the puck. So you know, and the other thing is, I don't know if he customarily uses white, whatever, but it feels like he's getting superstitious and he's shaking it up, right? Which is, by the way, it worked for Tuca.
So that's right. Like, I want to laugh at Stamkos and go, ooh, he's in trouble. But then in the same breath, I say, oh, wait a minute. Our goalie just did the exact same thing, and I think it's a good thing. So I can't mock it.
Yeah, except that Stamkos is better than Tuca. Like, that's the way I look at it. You have more ability than the other guy does. Not to say that Tuca doesn't have any. But Stamkos is what? You know, one of the top five players in the league when he's on his game?
Moran also said, I didn't hear Chris Kunitz's name until 4:35 left in the second period. I played with Kunitz, and he can be so annoying that it's incredible. I wonder if he's playing injured because he can impact a game in a lot of ways. And that's, I feel the same way. Kunitz is going to show up in this thing like Plekanec did. I can just feel it. And it's going to show up against that Bergeron line in some way. I just think you have to. I just think you have to.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.